You're listening to Chris Ayotte on WMUZ 103.5 The Light. Detroit made, Bible strong. Our theme today is leading in times like this. And my next guest is a third-generation successor who worked for 20 years in the family biz, including 7 years as president and CEO of Dominion Construction. He's a founding principal of a group called Next Step Advisors. He's a sought-after consultant, workshop leader, and mentor. He has best-selling books, The Company You Keep and Living a Legacy, and a new book out that was just out about a year ago called Dear Younger Me, Wisdom for Family Enterprise Successors. I want to welcome back to the show David Bentall. How you doing, David?
Great, Chris. Thanks. Pleasure to be with you again. Thanks.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. And David, you know, the last time we had you on, you and I had talked about emotional intelligence, or EI, as they say, and why it matters. This time, I was hoping to go in a direction of how we can develop our emotional intelligence, especially for the leaders out there.
Well, thank you, Chris. It ain't easy. I'll start by that. You know, the reason I wrote my most recent book about that is because I'm in the remedial class. It's something that I wish I'd worked on a lot sooner. Chris, would it be helpful if I just shared maybe just a couple tips that have come to top of mind for me?
I have my notepad and pen ready to go, David. Please.
Awesome. Well, Chris, I think the first thing, I'll give you three to start with. The first thing I think we need is to develop our self-awareness. You know, as a young man, I was not aware of how important it was how I was interacting with other people. I just thought it was important for me to know what needed to get done. Mm-hmm. And so I was quite unaware of how I was coming across as abrupt, opinionated, and impatient. And so the first thing I think we need to be aware is start developing a self-awareness and start paying attention to how others are reacting to us. So that's the first thing.
And how do we do that, David, if we don't see ourselves, if we don't hear ourselves or understand what we're projecting to others?
Well, Chris, I'm so glad you asked, because the second thing I was going to say, it comes really right out of that. We need to get feedback. Next week I'm getting on a plane flying to Florida for the 80th trip to train with my water ski coach. He sits in the boat and he looks at me and he tells me what I'm doing behind the boat that I need to change.
How do I take that trip with you, David? How do I get on that ticket?
Just I'm going to Boca Raton, so just whatever flight you get to Boca.
I'm Boca bound.
But you know, Chris, the key is we just need to ask for feedback, right? I said to this guy, who's one of the best water ski coaches in the world, I said, can you just tell me what I'm doing wrong and what I need to do differently? And in my professional life as a young executive, in my 30s, I remember working with a man who was president of our company before I became president. And he was willing to sit me down a couple times a year and he would tell me what I was doing wrong in my relationship. So I think the second thing we need to do is, after awareness, is ask for feedback from people we trust. And then the third thing is, which I love this, I was thinking about it ahead of time, spend time with other people who have good emotional intelligence, who have good EQ or EI. You know, two people that I, for an example, last year, two men that I happen to know professionally through the business community here in Vancouver, and I noticed that these guys are patient, they're curious, they're great listeners, and I remember taking them both out for dinner with their wives and said, you might wonder what the occasion is. I just want to become more like you. Mm. And so we need to hang around Chris, with people and let it rub off and absorb some of it.
And what a compliment to them, David, because I think you're absolutely right. The leaders that I think about in my past, and I have to be honest with you, I don't think I was appreciating what they were doing at the time. You know, I was thinking, well, gosh, shouldn't you have more grit? You know, shouldn't you be more vocal and be bolder? And, you know, why are you asking all these questions? Why are you listening to everybody around the room? Because that person doesn't know what they're talking about. And what I realize now.
You sound exactly like me.
Yeah.
That I used to be like.
They were reading the room. They were hearing it. They were weighing the input. I think they already had some preconceived ideas that they were looking for either confirmation or feedback, like you say, and they were practicing what I realize now. That is good, honest to goodness leadership.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah. Well, and you know, when you use the word leadership, why don't we just talk a little bit about how that connects to EQ? Can I do that?
Absolutely. Because I feel like I'm still schooling on this emotional intelligence concept. Well,
so let me come at it from a different angle. So as a young man, the first file that I ever opened was a file on leadership because I aspired to be a leader. You know, I'd heard about people like Churchill and people like Abe Lincoln was one of my heroes. So I thought, I want to be a leader. And I remember one of my first job interviews, I was asked, you know, what does a leader do? And I said, well, I think a leader does two things. A leader helps set direction. And secondly, a leader inspires others to follow. So if we want to be leaders, we need to figure out where we're going and we need to inspire others to follow. So wrapping that back to, or tying that back to EQ or emotional intelligence, if we cultivate, Chris, emotional intelligence, we will become, as you said, better listeners. We will become more curious. We'll become capable of critical thinking rather than being caught up in our emotions. So if we are curious, better listeners, able of critical thinking, we can therefore gather information, synthesize it, and choose wiser courses of action. So we're better at setting direction if we cultivate EQ. And then on the other side, if we have more emotional intelligence, we can build relationships with others where they will be willing to sign up and follow us to go to that destination that we've charted. So if we can get over ourselves, swallow our pride, and develop humility and emotional intelligence, we can inspire others to go with us. So regardless of what your problem is as a leader, or Chris, where you need to grow, if it's figuring out where to go or figuring out how to get others to go with you, I think emotional intelligence can help.
Yeah.
Both. Does that make sense?
It does. And you're like, so whether this is in the workplace, maybe it's in a community organization, yep, an outreach, you're volunteering, it's in your home, it's with your family, you're saying we can practice healthy EI or EQ. Anywhere.
Yeah. Well, and I think about it with our daughters, you know, talk about in the community, you know, I had the privilege of coaching our eldest daughter's soccer team for a number of years. And, you know, one of the things I needed to learn to do was abandon my thou shalt do it the way I say and chat it over with the girls. As these young women were moving into their teens, they wanted to be a part of setting their own agenda for what they were doing. And so I needed to realize command and control doesn't work. And I needed to learn to relate to them in an emotionally intelligent way and draw out from them what got them excited about practice, what got them excited about playing soccer. And so regardless of where we lead, emotional intelligence can multiply our efforts.
Yeah. And what's interesting to me, David, is I guess looking at, look, fashions are very cyclical. But if I put on a sport coat that's 25 years old, you would say, Chris, really, it's time to retire that.
Well, it might have come back around by now.
Yeah, well, if you hold it long enough, I notice the double-breasted suits are starting to, you know, sort of tease back in. So I will brush those off, but I'm going to have to lose 25 pounds. Anyway, you know what's interesting to me is, you know, these kind of leadership approaches that we thought worked in the past, you mentioned command and control, or what some call a regimented military style, what others call the old boys club. You know, you look back and you think, okay, this approach either wasn't right or it wasn't really that effective, or in today's times, because we're talking about leadership that I think today, given everything that's going on in our culture and society, in politics and social, I mean, whatever it is, you know, we as leaders, we need to adapt. We need to keep our eyes and ears open. And maybe some of those things that we leaned on in the past won't work today.
Yeah. Well, and you know, my father and my grandfather before me, you know, they went through two world wars. At least my grandfather experienced two world wars. My dad experienced the Great Depression and the Second World War. You know, they grew up in an environment where command and control was normal. And that was a matter of survival. You know, my children, my grandchildren, they're growing up in a world where hopefully they're not going to experience the same kind of trauma that my dad and my grandpa experienced. And they're looking to be led in a different way than being told what to do.
Mm-hmm. And how do you perceive the shifts, the changes, the adaptations leaders have had to make, even over the last 2 years in the marketplace with companies, I mean, given people working remotely, coming back, rules, regulations, protocols, how do leaders adapt in times like this, David?
Well, one of the biggest things, Chris, with working remotely is we need to be able to inspire people to take initiative on their own because they're not at the office where we can talk to them, see them, communicate with them as frequently. So we need to inspire people, which comes back to, think about if you're working on your own at home, what is going to inspire you to put your shoulder to the wheel and do your best? And I think it's helping people get a sense of what is the purpose or mission. I talked to two guys earlier this week, and they're both investment bankers by training, and they formed their own company. And they said, we're tired of just chasing dollars. We want to look for companies that we can acquire where we're in alignment with their purposes. So I think people are looking, Chris, much more for what is the purpose of the company, not just does it make money.
Yeah.
And, these guys decided, they want to do things that are going to help with the planet. So they're investing in companies that are helping improve our environment. And so, I think the millennial generation and those following them care much more about the what of the business rather than or what the business is for rather than just getting a job.
Yeah. I mean, it really, in effect, defines purpose-driven leadership.
You got it.
David, we want to continue our conversation with you. David Bentall is the author of the book, Dear Younger Me. Boy, I can think of all kinds of things I want to tell my younger self. This is about wisdom for family enterprise successors. The publisher is Castle Key, and you can learn more at David's website at nextstepadvisors.ca. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about, yes, of all things, I know, forgiveness and gratitude. Why is that important as leaders? We're talking about leading in times like this. You're listening to Chris Ayotte on WMUZ 103.5 The Light, Detroit made Bible strong.
Delivering inspiration that counts. Join Chris Ayotte, celebrating faith with an exclamation point, Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 on WMUZ 103.5 The Light, Detroit made Bible strong.
Hold on tight a little longer. Work don't kill you, make you stronger. Get back up, it's a
corner. You're listening to Chris Ayotte on WMUZ 103.5 The Light, Detroit made Bible strong. Honored to have with us David Bentall, who is the author of the book Dear Younger Me. He's also the founding principal of Next Step Advisors. And David, you've been in business a lot of years. In family business, I can't imagine having to work with your brothers, your sisters, your mom and dad. I mean, how did that go for you?
Well, working with my dad was great. Working with my sisters as my partners was great. It was my uncles and I who had a little trouble.
Oh, Uncle Ed. It's always somebody. Yeah. And yet you talk about the lessons learned. We're going to get to forgiveness and gratitude here in just a moment, which I think is really profound for those who are leading to remember these things. But again, remind our audience, what do you think were some of the top lessons learned, maybe one or two or three from that experience that you wish you would have known, you would have told your younger self?
Well, thank you, Chris. I guess the first thing I would have told myself would be more patient. I was in a ridiculous hurry. My uncle was 55 when I joined the family company. I did the math. I knew that in 10 years he was going to retire. And so I started working on a plan to be ready to be president within 10 years. And my uncle said I needed to wait 20. And I was out to prove him wrong. And he was out to prove me wrong. And Chris, right at the beginning, it was my desire to do it too fast. So be more patient. How bad would it have been if I'd waited until I was in my early 40s to have the privilege to lead? So that was a huge one. The second one is, I think to lead, we need to first of all learn how to follow. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to lead, and I wasn't prepared to learn to follow. And I think if I had to do it over again, I would have asked my uncle what he needed me and wanted me to do rather than telling him what I thought he needed to do to give me more authority. And then the biggest thing, that in addition to those two, Chris, for me, was humility. I God gave me a good brain. I was willing to work hard, but I couldn't get over myself. I thought I was everything. I thought I was always right, which led to arrogance and abrasiveness that I'm ashamed of. And so you can see a little bit of patience, a little bit of humility, and a little bit of self-control would have made a huge difference. Kind of sounds like the fruit of the Spirit, doesn't it?
It does. It's profound. And I think it's amazing what you've learned through the process. And I think it takes humility and transparency to admit it. I think it takes courage as well, David. So patience, learning to follow, and having humility, the three biggest lessons in that leadership. You also talk about forgiveness and gratitude. And, you know, what better concepts to talk about this time of year?
Well, thank you. Let's start by talking about gratitude because Thanksgiving is upon us. And I guess, you know, Ian, it's not something we talk about in a work environment very often.
Not unless there's something in it for you.
That's it. just think about it. You know, we all don't like the toxic complainers. An attitude of gratitude is the opposite of the toxicity that comes from complaining. And, you know, for me as a young man, I was complaining, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, you know, not having enough authority. So I was always complaining about not being given a chance to do what I wanted, complaining about how my uncle was leading the business. And I had a very interesting thing happen to me this fall, Chris. I was in my over breakfast. One of the things I've started doing is listing the three things I'm thankful to God for at the beginning of each day. And I sat down, and before I started my list of things I was grateful for, I had this feeling of overwhelm. I had too much on my plate, and I had some challenging things with clients. And as I was listing the things that I was upset about and telling the Lord about the things I was upset about, then I turned to my gratitude list and I went, oh, I'm grateful for those same things. The fact that I got tons of work, I'm grateful for that. That was the problem a few minutes ago. The fact that I got all these problems, I'm thankful that clients give me stimulating work. I was frustrated that I've just got these people dumping their problems on me. Third, I'm grateful that people trust me and are willing to pay me for the opportunity to help. So, Chris, the same things were both on my overwhelm list and on my gratitude list. And it helped me to realize that what a difference it makes if we can begin each day with cultivating gratitude. And gosh, we're much better people to work with if we cultivate. Does that make any sense to you?
Oh, it absolutely does. And I like the fact that, you know, you came back and reminded yourself. Because I do that too. I mean, some of us call it counting our blessings, but you know, just going through, David, this attitude recalibration that says, look, God has done all these things for me. Why do I keep looking at what I don't have or what didn't work out or who said what? And yeah, I got offended and, you know, I'm going to teach them a thing or two. And it, you know, you're like, wait a minute. If I just take the right outlook, the right attitude, and apply what I know, not only am I taking the high road, but I'm just being a better me. And don't you want to be a better me in your environment, especially with people you're spending most of your life with every single day?
Yeah. Well, and not only you're a better me for their benefit, you know, just think of the knots that I was getting myself into, thinking about having too much work and too many problems, and too many challenges. But yet, frankly, you know, those were opportunities for gratitude. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so good and so key right now, and not just this time of year, but always.
Yeah. So should we talk about forgiveness for a minute? Because most people don't want to talk about forgiveness in the workplace.
Yeah, let's only talk about that for about a minute, and then we'll go on to something else, David. No, I'm kidding. No, forgiveness is really profound.
Well, I want to start with an example of a commercial forgiveness where you all of our listeners will have heard of IBM and Thomas Watson, one of the former president of the company. And famous story is told about how one of his salesmen had made a proposal and been unsuccessful in the proposal, and it cost the company $400,000 worth of revenue in the middle of the Depression. And so this young man came in and gave a letter of resignation to Mr. Watson and said, "I'm really sorry. I failed you. I let you down. I know it costs $400,000, and so I understand that you'll want my resignation. So here it is." And Mr. Watson promptly ripped up the letter of resignation. Said, "Why would I accept your resignation when I've already invested $400,000 in your education. And what Mr. Watson realizes, we all make mistakes. The important thing is that we learn from them. And there are lots of examples, but there's just one that helps me to remember that forgiveness is human. And to forgive is divine. So we need to think about, you know, what it would be more like the Lord if we can be forgiving. And so, you know, I remember someone sharing with me last year that if I was listening to a marriage seminar, and they said, if you're going to have any relationship at all, forget marriage or any relationship last any time at all, if you're married to another human being, they are going to let you down. And so if you're not prepared to forgive, your relationship is not going to last very long. And so, you know, in the business environment, your colleagues will let you down. And so they may not mean to, but we need in the business environment, as well as in our family relationships and our personal relationships, our instinct is often to cover up and to not own, just like Adam and Eve in the garden, they went to hide. We want to hide our mistakes in the business space, but we need to be the kind of people who are willing to own up to our mistakes, ask for forgiveness, and be willing to offer it. Otherwise, our relationships are not going to last very long. No, so forgiveness is as relevant in the workplace as it is in the home, in my view.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, it's interesting because so many people struggle with the concept of forgiveness. Someone who had offended or done something wrong, especially in this digital age, this era of social media. Why do people, even believers, struggle with the idea of just simply forgiving somebody for a mistake or what they said or what they did?
Well, I don't know why others struggle, but I know one of the reasons that I struggle is because I want justice. You know, if someone stepped on my foot, somebody should pay for doing that, right? So I think we all want justice. And so we camouflage our lack of forgiveness in that note that they did something wrong, so they should pay. And I think we need to abandon our desire for justice and seek to allow love to overflow from us, you know. And that's why I just at the beginning there, Chris was talking about how we all make mistakes. And I think we need to take a good look in the mirror. I remember one of our years ago, our pastor said, speaking to one morning, he said, you know, there's two kinds of people. Those who seek to honor God with all their lives, want to honor him, those who are fully devoted to him. And then there's all the rest of us.
Yeah.
and he fully had me because I was listing myself with the first group. But he said, and then there's all the rest of us.
Wow. It really puts things in perspective. You know, most of us hear, David, about, you know, especially when you think of family empires, family infighting and business and family, sometimes it goes sideways. Relationships falling apart. You alluded to that with your uncles. How can we go into business with family while avoiding, you know, harming those relationships?
Well, Chris, I'm so glad you asked because just this week I spoke to a woman who really inspired me gave a great tip on this. She's a young woman who co-inherited a family business from her parents. Well-educated, chose to be a lawyer instead of joining the family business, and her brothers wanted to buy her out. And at first she was really hurt that, you know, brothers didn't want her there. And what helped them, Chris, is something that can help all of us. They, as a family, had adopted a slogan that I think every family in business should adopt. They had adopted a slogan, no amount of money is worth one broken relationship. And as they tried to figure out, should the brothers buy her out? Should she sell? You know what happened when they applied that? The two brothers decided, okay, we're not going to force our sister out. Let's offer her more than what we think her one third of the company is worth. And the daughter agreed, you know, sure, I should get, why shouldn't I be able to own the business? But if my brothers would rather not. So she let go of her desire to hold on to her shares. They let go of their desire to get a deal. And they were able to choose to make a deal together. But it was really this guiding principle. No amount of money is worth one broken relationship. So Chris, I think we need to decide at the beginning what we want. And I think we need to choose family is more important than the buck. That's how we can do it. We can say family is more, just building on that, you know, when my mom passed away, My sisters and my brother and I sat around the kitchen table, and we had divided up the furniture and things out in the house, but we had some smaller items we were trying to decide. And I remember that morning saying to my wife, you know, I have everything I need. And as we ran around the table, you know, we were talking about stuff, and I kept reminding myself, I have everything I need. I need nothing more. I have everything I need. And I found myself mumbling it out loud. And my sister said, what are you saying? But I had decided before I sat down at the table, I have everything I need. And I think, Chris, you know, if we can remind ourselves what really matters, and it's relationships are more important than the buck. I think that's how we need to remind ourselves before we sit down at the table, that the relationships are more important than the money.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's profound. Even when times get tough, like we've seen with the economy, inflation, political, social, cultural, how should leaders adapt to the changing issues and climate, if you will, in this sort of geopolitical atmosphere we live in today?
Well, I'm going to borrow from one of your, you know, I'm a Canadian, but I'm going to borrow from one of your founding fathers. You know, reading Benjamin Franklin's biography a few years ago.
One of my favorites, even though Ben was, you know, he wasn't perfect Christian, you know, but who's a perfect Christian?
I was astonished when I was listening to his biography. He said, and I quote, "I decided to deny myself the privilege of ever disagreeing with anyone," end of quote. Mm. And I remember thinking, how did he get anything done?
Exactly.
But you see, what he did was he decided that he was not going to attack people. And so Benjamin Franklin learned to listen, and he learned to say, now, Chris, unless I'm mistaken, it would seem to me that it might be possible that there could be another way of looking at that. What do you, could we just consider, is there maybe a different way? And I think that, you know, we've in politics today and in all kinds of things in our modern world, we've become polarized.
Yeah.
But Benjamin Franklin, can you imagine him sitting around as they're drafting the U.S. Constitution? It's no wonder that he was able to help build consensus, because he denied himself the privilege of ever disagreeing with anyone. So, well, can we let's look at it this? Let us reason together. So I think that's key for us these days, to abandon our strident advocacy of our own position and learn to listen more to the other side.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm all for, you know, having a position on something and maybe mm-hmm. feeling a sense of conviction about it. But like you say, I mean, the polarization, it just bothers me that everything has to be looked at as, you know, I'm right, you're wrong. And, you know, the other party's saying the same thing against me. And you've got this division, this divisive spirit. Thank God the founding fathers didn't have that. They were consensus builders. Obviously, they were fighting for freedom, yes, against the British. But, you know, I know that Franklin worked with the French. And, boy, he really made out there. Thank God for the French. They came to our aid.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was probably some good wine involved, too.
I think so.
David, you've got some things coming up here, because I know you've been developing some material about emotional intelligence. Tell us more.
Well, thank you, Chris. When I finished my most recent book, and you've kindly mentioned the title a couple of times, Dear Younger Me, when I finished the book, I realized the book was really about how I, as a young man, lacked emotional intelligence, how I lacked humility, how I lacked patience, how I lacked forgiveness, gratitude, these things. And so when I finished the book, I sent it off to the publisher, and I thought, if people read my book, they'll realize that I was unwise as a young man to not cultivate these things, and that they don't want to be like me. And I thought, that's a pretty lousy outcome for a book. People say, David was stupid, I don't want to be like that. That's maybe not a very good outcome. But I realized...
Yeah, here's what not to do by David. No, it wasn't so much.
Yeah, so I realized that if folks are going to learn to cultivate these things, like the kind of humility that Benjamin Franklin had, the kind of patience that I wish I'd had, the kind of gratitude and forgiveness we were talking about, I realized that in addition to reading a book about it, people would need mentoring and coaching. And so what we've developed, Chris, is a program called Emotional Intelligence for Successors, and we offer it in 3-month modules. And if people are interested, we've had people from Switzerland and from all across the U.S. and Canada taking our programs, as we've launched them last year and now launching the next cohort will be starting in January. And the idea is that folks who are interested in cultivating emotional intelligence in their personal and professional lives can be part of a cohort, small groups. It's designed for 12 or less. Typically we've had 10 folks participate, and we meet every other week as a group, and every alternating week you get individual one-on-one coaching, helping you to cultivate these things. So if people are listeners are interested, or if their kids are interested, I'd love to hear from them, because my passion, Chris, is to help people get a better result than I got and to learn to cultivate these traits of emotional intelligence while they still have a chance. I'm 66 now. It's too late for me. So I want to help the next generation.
Oh, you're young, David. Young. Well, look, they're saying a lifespan. It's growing to be near 120 years. So you're midlife.
66 is the new 20?
Yes. And the older you get, you know, again, it's attitude. I'm telling you, it's outlook.
Well, I was asked the other day, how do you define old? And I said 100. 100's old now. I used to define old as 20, but now define it as 100.
Yeah, the older you get, the goalposts just keep moving. That's how it works. Well, David, we thank you for your time, your wisdom, your insights. It sounds like tremendous resources on your mentoring program with the EQ4S that you mentioned and all of what you're doing there. And again, the book is Dear Younger Me, Wisdom for Family Enterprise Successes. And folks, you can learn more at his website at nextstepadvisors.ca. All one word, nextstepadvisors.ca. David Bentall, thank you for being with us, sir.
Chris, my pleasure. Always good to talk to you.
God bless you. You too.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You too. You're listening to Chris Ayotte on WMUZ 103.5 The Light, Detroit made Bible strong.